Tessa did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In the NHS, training places for nurses are capped by Treasury spending limits while hospital wards run chronically short-staffed and training facilities sit empty. Bermondsey and Old Southwark ranked 168 out of 543 English constituencies on the Deprivation Index, exemplifies how artificial budget constraints prevent qualified people from entering healthcare careers their communities desperately need.
I grew up three streets from Borough Market, where my dad worked the vegetable stalls and my mum served school dinners at the local primary. When my gran was dying, the nurses at Guy's Hospital were extraordinary. They had time for her, time for us. I watched them work and thought, this is what I want to do with my life. It took me 6 years to get the qualifications. I worked in a care home during the day and went to night school for my A-levels. The residents used to ask about my homework, and Mrs. Patterson would test me on anatomy while I helped her with her medication. She called me nurse as a joke, but I loved hearing it. I was going to make it real. King's College London accepted me for nursing training in 2019. I cried when the letter came. My mum cried. We had a celebration dinner at the cafe by Tower Bridge, and I felt like everything was finally falling into place. Then, 2 weeks before the course was supposed to start, another letter arrived. Due to budgetary constraints imposed by Health Education England, your funded place has been withdrawn. We had 220 places advertised, but funding has been restricted to 180. You remain on our waiting list for future cohorts. I rang the admissions office. The woman sounded genuinely upset. It happens every year, she said. We have the lecture halls, we have the clinical placements arranged, we have qualified applicants, but the Treasury sets our budget and we cannot exceed it. I deferred for a year and picked up extra shifts at the care home, trying to save enough to pay fees myself. 12-hour shifts, weekends, bank holidays. By 2020, I had saved £8,000, but tuition was £15,000 and rising. I applied again anyway. This time I made it onto the waiting list, but never got called up. The same admissions officer rang me in September. I'm so sorry, Tessa. We've actually had to reduce places again this year. The Department of Health budget is even tighter. But you accepted me last year, I said. You know I can do the work. It's not about capability, she said. There is no funding. The places simply don't exist. I tried St George's, University of London in 2021. Different building, same conversation. The course coordinator walked me through the nursing school after my interview. Beautiful facilities, state-of-the-art simulation labs, lecture theatres with electronic whiteboards. We could train twice as many nurses as we're funded for, she said. Look around. Does this look like we lack capacity? Then why? Treasury spending limits, she said. We cannot afford to run that program at the scale we need. That phrase again. Cannot afford. I started working as a healthcare assistant at Guy's, thinking maybe I could work my way up somehow. At least I was in a hospital, learning, helping patients. The ward was chaos. We were supposed to have 12 nurses per shift and consistently had 7 or 8. Agency nurses filled the gaps at 3 times the cost of permanent staff. One evening, I was helping move equipment and got lost trying to find a storeroom. I ended up on the 5th floor of the Nightingale building, completely empty, rows of classrooms with nursing textbooks still on the shelves, a clinical skills lab with hospital beds and IV stands, all covered in dust sheets, a sign by the lifts, Nurse Education Centre, temporarily closed. I asked my manager about it the next day. Oh, that's been shut for 2 years, she said. Budget cuts. They moved all the training off-site to save money. But we're paying agencies £200 a shift for nurses we could train ourselves. She shrugged. Different budgets. Training comes from Health Education England. Staffing comes from the trust. Neither has enough money. I met Seren at a healthcare workers support group. She was trying to get into midwifery training and hitting the same walls. They told me there were 15 places at Lewisham for 89 qualified applicants, she said. not because they can't teach 89 people, because they can't afford to. That word again, afford. I started thinking about what it actually meant. The government that prints the money on my payslips and the coins in my pocket was telling me it couldn't find enough of those same pounds to train nurses, but I could see the empty training floors, the qualified people waiting for places, the wards desperate for staff. My ward sister, Maria, had worked there for 15 years. It wasn't always like this, she told me during a rare, quiet moment. We used to train nurses here constantly. The building was full of students. Then austerity hit and everything got streamlined. What changed? I asked. The budget envelope, she said. Politicians decided training nurses was too expensive, so now we pay agencies four times as much to plug the gaps. The maths didn't make sense. We were spending more money to have fewer nurses. The excuse about affordability was covering up something else entirely. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But I could walk through empty training centers and see ward after ward crying out for staff. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were, all of them. I existed. Seren existed. The other 89 people rejected from midwifery training existed. The Nightingale building existed. The need certainly existed. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still working as a healthcare assistant. I'm still trying to get into nursing training. But I understand now that what I experienced is not just happening to me. It's happening in every constituency where people want to serve and communities need care, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was locked.
What Tessa experienced has a name. Fake experts. Throughout history, industries under scrutiny have deployed friendly experts to legitimize harmful practices. Tobacco companies funded scientists to question lung cancer links. Pharmaceutical companies cited researchers who downplayed addiction risks. The pattern is always the same. Genuine expertise exists, but a subset of professionals are presented as the authoritative voice, drowning out inconvenient evidence. In Tessa's story, every rejection cited economists who treat government budgets like household budgets. We cannot afford to train nurses, they said, as though the UK Treasury might bounce a cheque. These economists speak with such certainty that questioning them feels economically illiterate. But the economics profession is deeply divided on this point. Many macroeconomists argue that the binding constraint for government spending is very real capacity. People, skills, materials, not currency. The objection, economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation, relies on unnamed authority. Which economists? The profession includes monetarists who see inflation everywhere and post-Keynesians who see idle capacity. Citing economists say without naming them is textbook fake expertise. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Tessa's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Bermondsey and Old Southwark ranks 168 out of 543 English constituencies on the Deprivation Index, English Indices of Deprivation 2025, MHCLG. The constituency has 990 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £55.6 million, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.